Okay, today's daf is daf Tzadi Dalet. We're going to start at the bottom, just before the Mishnah, the very last line of the Mishnah. Umkom shesomchim shochatin, where they did the smicha, that's where they would do the shchita. Techef l'smicha shchita, and immediately after smicha would be the shchita. My kamar, what exactly is the Mishnah telling us? Hachi kamar, this is really what the Mishnah means. Bimkom shesomchim shochatin, shetechef l'smicha shchita. The Gemara connects those two phrases and says the reason why the location of the smicha would be in the same place where they would do the shchita is because immediately after smicha they would do shchita. And it's more to tell you that the smicha really is done where the shchita is performed.
I was wondering, given that that's the line from the Mishnah, why the Gemara yesterday's daf was talking about where they were doing leaning, whether it was on the head, whether it was on, because we knew this line, the location of the smicha, so it had to be the neck, no?
No. Here they mean the physical location of where they would do it in the Beit HaMikdash.
Oh, not the physical location on the animal.
No. Good that you're clarifying. Okay, that's how I understood it anyway, right? And the location where you do the smicha is where you do the shchita because you have to be ready to do the shchita.
That makes so much
more
sense.
Okay. Good you asked. Always good to ask questions. Okay. Mishnah. Chomer b'smicha mi b'tnufa. U'b'tnufa mi b'smicha. Both smicha and tnufa each have their own chomra, right, that the other doesn't have. She'echad meniv lechol ha'chaverim, ve'en echad somech lechol ha'chaverim. When you do tnufa, only one person does the tnufa on behalf. Let's say you have, this is only obviously in a case where you have a korban that is jointly owned by people. So the tnufa, one person does it on behalf of everybody else. And when it comes to the smicha, one does not do it on behalf of everybody, which would seem to imply, and this is why I gave you yesterday three interpretations to the previous Mishnah when it said, or the previous, I don't think it was in the Mishnah, but we learned the drasha, korbano, lerabot kol ba'alei korban l'smicha. One of the interpretations was everybody has to do smicha, which would seem to very much correspond with this, because this is saying, in smicha everybody has to do it, but in tnufa not everybody has to do it. And here, it's ein echad somech l'chol ha'chaverim, mean one can't. So therefore, the interpretation that everyone's allowed to doesn't seem to work so well. And all the more so, the third interpretation was that kol ba'alei korban l'smicha, that one is...
Is that on the sheet?
No. The third interpretation was that one does smicha for everybody, that's the halacha. Lerabot kol ba'alei korban l'smicha means that one does it on behalf of everyone else. And someone there had commented, this is obviously a gersa meshubeshet, it doesn't make any sense. And that's based on here, really, because here it seems very clear that it can't be that one ein echad somech kol ha'chaverim. So that doesn't make any sense. Okay. Chomer b'tnufa. What's the chomer of tnufa? Sh'atnufa nohege b'korbanot yachid u'b'korbanot tzibur. That... It applies both in individual and in communal offerings. Bechayim ubishchutim, live animals and slaughtered animals, right? Where smicha, right, is only an individual. Remember, not in Sibur other than the two unique exceptions. The smicha is always done on a live animal, not a dead animal. Whereas tnufa, if you remember, we had that whole thing. There were three things and three options, and two were this and two were that. And there were some animals that you were menif. If you remember, it's the shnei kvasim. You're menif both alive and dead, right? And also the chazev eshok, you do hanafa of the shlamim, and that's also done after the animal is slaughtered. Whereas some of it's done, right? The two kvasim, you do before and you do after, or there was a debate whether you do it after. So machloket there, but anyway, there are cases where you do it chayim and shchutim. U'b'davar she'yesh b'ruach chayim. U'b'davar she'ein b'ruach chayim. Okay, you could do it on live objects, like animals, and you could also be menif. What else are we menif that isn't alive besides the dead animal? But the breads, right? You wave the breads, the minachot. Masha'en came b'smicha, and smicha is never done on inanimate objects.
If you leaned on the bread,
you would break it, you would smush it, you would break it, it wouldn't be a very good idea. Depends how strongly you lean. Okay. Gemara starts out, as usual, with a braita. I just want to repeat here, it's very clear here from this whole... There's different styles of Gemaras and different mesechtot of different styles. For a very long time now, I think... For the most part, almost every Mishnah has basically given us the halacha, and then the Gemara starts immediately with a Tanu Rabbanan and a Braita and starts extrapolating. Where do we get this from? What are our sources? So we've definitely been going for a long time with this type of style of Gemara. It just shows, you know, certain styles are different. This is clearly, we have a halacha, Mishnah doesn't connect it to the sources, the Braita comes in right away, the Gemara wants right away to connect it. Where do they get this from? And that's because, you know, we've seen Masechta, for example, Bava Batra, where there was nothing connected to Psukim almost anywhere. There were almost no Psukim in the entire Masechet that we're teaching halachot. Here, the whole thing is Psukim, except that the Psukim don't really tell us everything, as we've been seeing since the beginning of Zvachim, that there's so many details mentioned, and yet so many details are missing. And the question is always, you know, how to figure out from the verses what those psukim mean. So here again, we're going to darshan. Tanu Rabbanan, korbano lirabot kol ba'alei korban l'smicha. Okay, korbano means, that we saw this yesterday, is to include all ba'alei korban l'smicha. She'achov v'halodinhu. Now we're going to go back to all these potential kafchomers. Why do we need a drasha? Because you might have thought it was logical to say they wouldn't. Why? Umat snufa shenitrabta b'shchutin nitma'ata b'chubarin. Smicha shelo nitrabta b'shchutin eino din shtema'et b'chubarin. I don't know how you pronounce that. Chovrin? Chovrin. Okay, like a chavura. Okay, that's where it comes from. So what are we saying here? If snufa would include even shechted animals, and smicha is not on shechted dead animals, only on live animals, and yet tnufa, which is more inclusive because it applies to shrutim, and yet it's nitma'a b'chovrin, it's not done when you have a number of people. Smicha shelo nitrabta b'shrutim eino din shtitma'et b'chovrin. So then wouldn't you say smicha, which doesn't apply across the board also to shrutim, is narrow in terms of where it applies in terms of only live animals, so then all the more so, wouldn't you think we're going to say it also doesn't apply in groups. Talmud lomar korbano lerabot kol ba'alei korban l'smicha. Okay, which teaches you, right? So now, again, we're back to only two interpretations of what korbano could be, what the kol ba'alei korban l'smicha, either everyone is obligated to, or the korban itself is obligated in smicha, which would make sense here compared to tnufa, where there is no obligation of tnufa when it's a bunch of people owning it. Okay, what's the, I think actually, here, we'll keep reading, and then we'll go back to the issue of tnufa. V'titrabet tnufa b'chovrin, why don't you say then tnufa would then apply also to groups? Mikavachomer, that we would learn out, again, from a kavachomer. Why? Now do the reverse. Umas smicha shelo nitrabta b'shrutin nitrabta b'chovrin. If smicha does not apply to shechted animals, and yet it applies to a group-owned korban, so tnufa shenitrabta b'shrutin eino din shenitrabta b'chovrin. So then tnufa, which applies by shechted animals also, by dead animals, wouldn't you think it would also apply to groups? So what do they answer? Mishum delo efshar. The reason why tnufa, here we don't have a drasha, we have a practical answer. It's not possible. Why is it not possible? Hey Chiliavid, how could we do it? Linfu, if you remember, we had this whole discussion when we talked about tnufa with the Kohen, and that the Kohen and the owner do the tnufa, and then we had this question, how do they do that? Isn't there a chatzitza? And some people said, one holds in one place, one holds in the other place, and another person said, well, since, you know, one goes to his hands on top of the other, and it's not considered a chatzitza. But, right, with chatzitza being a break between the hands and the animal. So now they're going to say, or whatever it might be that they're doing tnufan. So now they're going to say, though, linfu kulu bahade adade kahavya chatzitza. If you say they're all going to do it, right? First of all, imagine how many people can you gather around a korban. So then you're going to start distinguishing two people, yes, three people, no, four people. Yeah. It's going to be very complicated. And even if practically speaking, you could, in theory, you're now going to have, maybe you could say him and the Kohen is okay, each of them, whatever. But if you're going to have more people, then you're really getting far, far from the korban. Lina filahadar vilina. Here's a better suggestion. Why don't you wave it? They take turns. One waves it, then the next one, then the poor next sheep. One. What's the problem? What'd you say?
The poor sheep.
Poor sheep, yeah. Tnufa amarachmana velo tnufot. It says only tnufa. We saw this before, right? And not multiple. Usmicha b'shchutin leita. Now they're going to go back to, okay, so we've derived, right, that smicha doesn't apply smicha applies even, right, with a group of people, and tnufa doesn't. And now we learn where we got that. Now they're going to question that smicha does not apply to shrutin. So now they bring in the source, v'hatnan. Okay, doesn't it say in the Mishnah that bizman shekohen gadol rotze lahaktir, there's a Mishnah in Tamid, if the Kohen Gadol wanted to do the burning of the animals himself, of the Korban Tamid, haya oleba kevesh, vaskam b'yimino, this is basically saying the Kohen has rights, even though there was this whole lottery and who does what, the Kohen Gadol has rights to say, I want to do it. Okay, you can do that. And he would be oleba kevesh, vaskam b'yimino, and his, you know, the right-hand man would be on his right hand, literally. Higia l'machatzita kevesh, achaz skam b'yimino v'he'elehu. Okay, if he gets to the middle of the ramp and he gets tired, this is interesting, we never really thought about it, right? They're constantly going up the ramp. It's not always so easy, depending on, I don't know, I guess if he was old. So, you know, the skam would hold him just to kind of help him up. Boshilo harishon harosh v'haregel. Remember, we talked about this, where there was an order of which parts of the animal of the korban tamid would be sacrificed. You know, they would start with the rosh and the regel. Somech alehem v'zorkan. He would lean on them. Oh, this is interesting, right? The Kohen would lean, do smicha, on the rosh and the regel, the head and the leg of the animal. So here, what do you see? Before we continue, it's obvious that there was smicha on dead animals. Okay? Vizorkan, and then he would throw it. Remember, they would throw it. There was that gap between the ramp, and they would throw it. We learned that whole thing. Hoshit ha-sheni la-rishon. So now the second one, Hoshit ha-sheni la-rishon shtei yadayim. Right, so now the second one would pass to the first one, the two hands of the animal, or I don't know, right, four legs. Notzno l'kohen gadol, somech alehem v'zorkan, and then they would pass it to the kohen gadol, and he would then do smicha and throw it. Nishmat ha-sheni v'halachlo, okay, then he would disappear, right? And then v'kacha yumo shitin lo sha'ar kol evarim, somech alehem v'zorkan. So this is the process. If the kohen gadol did it, then he would be somech, and then he would throw, right? Then they would pass, each one would have their turn to kind of pass it to the kohen gadol. And if he wanted to, he could just do the smicha and other people would do the throwing. So they say, what do you see here? He did smicha. So what is on non-live animals? So Amar Abai, seemingly strange answer, doesn't really answer the question. This was all a particular thing that was instituted as out of respect for the Kohen Gadol. Okay? So Rashi says, in other words, there is no smicha mida oraita. There was this smicha minhag. He would do it as out of respect.
Proper anyhow, because if it's right. Body parts, it's not like
there's right. So first of all, it's not exactly smicha.
What's he leaning on?
Some people explain smicha, and that's a good question. That he was actually leaning on the kohanim, and it wasn't leaning on the animals at all. In other words, there's other ways to understand this mishnah that maybe it's not even talking about smicha. Clearly, the Gemara here understands it as if it's smicha on the animal, on the body parts. Some people say that he leans on, you know, in connection with, he was going up the ramp and needed help, you know, he leaned on them and they would kind of, it was a way of saying, you know, here we have this, I guess, elderly Kohen Gadol who's not so capable, but we're going to help him to enable him to do the service in the way that he can. Absolutely. Something like that. And then that would make sense, Mishum Kvodo to Kohen Gadol, and then maybe it's not actually smicha on the animal. But Rashi clearly understands it's smicha on the animal, but it's not real smicha. Okay?
Ceremonial.
Right. Some sort of ceremonial act. Okay, Hazon alach shtei midot. We're now starting with the shtei alechem. And today we're going to get into the practicalities of what the shtei alechem looked like, how they were baked, how they were done. Anyone who went to the bread workshop, this will help you a lot. Anyone who didn't, I have some pictures from it I can show you and recommend it to go because it'll really help. By the way, they're doing it again and they're doing a more advanced one. So if anyone wants information, you can try to look it up, Seidel's Bakery, or you can contact me about it. But he's doing a more advanced with all the details specifically dedicated to the Daf Yomi and what we're learning now about all the, I forget exactly what's incorporated there, but he sent to me a few days ago. So anyway, if anyone's interested. Shtei halechem niloshot achat achat. Okay, now we're going to talk about the shtei alechem and the lechem apanim. Remember, the shtei alechem went along with the kivsei atzeret that we brought on Shavuot. And the lechem apanim were the breads that sat on the shulchan. We're mainly going to deal with the lechem apanim today, but it starts off with the shtei alechem. They're niloshot achat achat, meaning you need them each separately. Okay, the shtei alechem were very large breads. Okay, they were niloshot achat achat, v'ne'efot achat achat, and they were each that you prepare the dough separately and you put it in the oven separately. Okay, they were put in on their own. I was thinking it's like when you bake. You know, sometimes you say it's better to just put one thing in the oven and not two. It affects the temperature and the way things bake. You know, so here they're telling you, mamash, bake it by itself. I don't know if that's the reason, but lechem apanim niloshot achat achat. The lechem apanim, you would prepare each one individually. Now, remember, how many were there? 12. V'ne'efot shtayim shtayim. Okay, maybe because there were so many, you know, it would be forever if you did one at a time. So they would be baked two at a time. Why not more than two? I mean, we're going to see drashot from the psukim, but, you know, otherwise, I'm not really sure why specifically it was shtayim shtayim. U'bitfus haya oseh otam. Okay, we're going to learn how many tfusim there were, but right now they're going to say they put it in a mold. Okay, there was a special mold it went into. Kishuhu rodan notnan litfus kedei shelo yitkalkalu. From here, it sounds like there were two tfusim. Later, we're going to learn there were three. It sounds like he would put it in a mold. Okay, oseh otan, he would make it in a mold. Okay, I'm going to pass this picture around from the workshop. Okay, the mold, you can't see it perfectly, but there's a metal piece that was a mold that it kind of went. And then you put the dough around it, and then you put, he created a thing on top. I don't know if that's exactly how the mold looked in the Beit HaMikdash, but that it was kind of a metal frame. Okay, some people say that there were three tefusim, I'll tell you already. One was to prepare the dough in. One was that sat in the oven, and you put it in the oven into the mold. I don't know how you got it out of the first mold into the second mold. I'm not exactly sure how that worked, because it was still dough, and it could easily break. And then the third was when it was done, it kind of went into a mold right when it got out of the oven. Okay? That mold was clearly gold. There's a debate about whether the other two were gold also. If you think about how much money they spent on these kelim, right? It sounds a little crazy. So some people think, no. Obviously the other ones were, you know, just sort of some sort of metal. But some people say they were all gold. Okay, so he would make them in a mold, and when he rodan, ridiata pat is one of these, you know, they always say it's a melacha. In those days, they would put the bread on the oven, like stick it to the sides of the oven, and then the rodeh would have to remove it from the oven. So when he removed it from the oven, he would put it in a new tfus, kadesh alayit kalkalu. Now, anyone who went to the bread workshop, when I went, certainly, once he took it out of the mold, it broke immediately, okay? It's very, very hard. So the biggest challenge, okay, we're going to talk about the shape in a minute, was to make them in such a way that they didn't break. That was like a really big issue. So that's why it's interesting when you see in the workshop, you know, otherwise you say, okay, so they won't break, but how big a deal? How, you know, how many times do you make bread and it breaks? But because of the shape of the bread, it was very easily breakable, okay? It could easily fall apart. We'll see why. Okay, where do we get? First, we're going to just talk about these halachot. How do we know that the shalechem was niloshot achad achad and ne'efot achad achad and the lechem apanim was niloshot achad achad and ne'efot shtayim shtayim? Ditanu rabanan. Again, we're going to start right away with a braita where we learn it from. Shnei esronim yeh halah achat. Okay, two esronim is the halah achat. So what do they say? Why does it say, it just could have said, Shnei Esronim Yeha Chala. Chala is a singular. I mean, this goes back to Yado. Does Yado mean one or two? But assuming the pshat, that Chala is singular, it would obviously mean only one of them. So, why Ha'achat? Melamed Sheni Loshot Achat Achat. That means they were each prepared individually. Minayin Sha'af Shtei Alechem Kach. How do we know that this would also apply to the Shtei Alechem? Talmud Lomar Yihiyeh. Okay, Shnei Esronim Yihiyeh. Yihiyeh comes to include something else also. Not just the lechem apanim, but also the shtei lechem. Minayin sha'afiyatan shtayim shtayim. How do we know that you would bake them two at a time? Talmud lomar, b'samta otam shtayim ma'arachot shesh ha'marechet al ha'shulchan ator lefnei Hashem. So b'samta otam, they say, teaches you them. You put them, presumably they mean in the oven, and so therefore them means, minimum them is two. Yachol af shtei lechem ken. How do you know this only applies to the lechem apanim and not to also the two breads that go with Shavuot offering? Talmud lomar otam. They learn from the word otam that those and not anything else. Now the obvious question is, what do you mean? We just darshened otam a second ago to mean otam means two go in the oven at the same time. So how can we say that otam is one, you know, at the same time means those two, you know, two go in of the lechem apanim, and it also means, but the Shei Alechem is not that way. It's also exclusive. Hai otam ha'afikte. Didn't we just learn something from there? So what are the answer? Our typical, im kein le makrav is samtam. If it just wanted to tell you two, it would have said, and you put them, right? Besamtam, that's smichut, we call it, right? Where you put besamtam otam together, you say besamtam. My besamta otam. Why do they put it as two separate words? Shma bina tarte. So we can derive two things from the word otam. Okay, Tana Rabbanan. V'samta otam batfus. Here we get the three tfusim. Shlosha tfusim hem. Okay, there were three molds that they used. Notna litfus v'adayin hi batzek. Okay, so you would put it in the tfus, in the mold, while it's still dough. Uchemin tfus hayala batanur. It sounds like it actually was always in the tanur. There's a bit of a debate about whether you just put it in the tanur or it sat in the tanur. It was kind of part of, maybe built into the tanur or something. There was a tfus in the tanur. Ukeshuhu rodeh, and that's the second one. And the third is, keshuhu rodeh, notna b'tfus kadesha lo titkalkel. Now they say, okay, so we understand there's one in the oven. That one's stationary in the oven. You're not going to use that for anything else. But if you started with a tfus, and you ended with a tfus, and they were both outside of the oven, why don't you just use the same one? V'lehadra l'tfus kama. Why don't you just return it to the first one? So what's the obvious answer? Anyone who bakes knows this. Kevanda afela nafcha. Once you bake it, it expands a little. Now, even though it wasn't a yeast dough, it expands a little, and it's no longer going to fit into that original mold.
He had a second piece that he put on top of it.
Right, to shape it properly.
That's what I'm talking about. Maybe that's the second.
So he, if I remember correctly, he said that he just made that in order to make the shape better. It's not so clear that that's what their tfus look, you know, that they actually use that. He used it for baking purposes, that it made a lot of sense to kind of flatten it down. In other words, he had, right, you could see in the picture here, he had a piece at the bottom, and around that he shaped the bread, and then there was a piece on top that was the same shape, just a little wider. You can see it right up there, and he would put it on top to kind of put it into place. Okay. So, but I don't think that they mean three, that three were used for three different purposes. One before you went in, one out, one inside, and one after. And again, what I really haven't figured out is how they transferred it from the mold when it was still dough to the mold that was inside the oven. Not so clear to me. Unless you put the mold inside a mold, maybe. You know, I'm not sure why you would do that. But then I guess this question wouldn't be relevant, how you bring it back to the first one, because the first one's still in there. I'm not sure. Itmar. Now we get to a very, very basic machloket, and this is what's going to take us for the rest of the daf. Lechem apanim ketzado sinoto. What was the shape of the lechem apanim? Rabbi Chanina amar kimin teva prutza. Like an open box, okay? Which basically means a rectangular shape, okay? Like an open rectangle lying on its side. Kind of thing, okay? And that's the picture that you see. That was the lechem apanim that he made in the bread workshop. Okay, I think it was an easier one to kind of figure out how to make, so that was the one he chose to do. I don't know if he's tried, I don't remember if he said he's tried the other one.
He had a mold for the other one.
He did have a mold, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, right. It could be just the workshop we went to, that's what he did, and
no,
maybe
he
a different one.
He had tried both, and this one just made
this one just good. Works better. Uh-huh. Okay, and this one actually is the one that ultimately they paskin like. Okay, like at least there's a bit of a debate why they passed in this way, because in the end we're going to bring a brayta that supports the other reading, and since these were amoraim and we bring a brayta that supports the other reading, it seems like the other one would be more. But interestingly, the Rambam clearly paskins that it's this way. And okay, so it's a kimin teva prutza. Okay, you can see, right? Unfortunately, these pictures don't really show it, but you can see pictures of, if you swipe there, there's pictures of the lechem apanim, both the shapes in the from the bread workshop. I took pictures. Let's see if I can post them online. Okay, kimin teva prutza. Rabbi Yochanan amar kimin sfina rokedet. You can see, by the way, in Rashi, if you have a Gemara, there's pictures in Rashi, which, by the way, it's not so clear Rashi drew these pictures. Okay, someone who printed it put them in there to kind of give us.
What did he say?
We're going to talk about. So, I think what you're going to say. Okay, so kimin teva prutza. If you look in Rashi, so there's that open rectangle, and then there's a V. Okay, sfina rokedet. If you look in the Schottenstein, they have Svina Rokedet, it's not, they don't exactly show as a V, it's more like a rounded thing, which, okay, a Svina, Rabbi Yochanan Amar means Svina Rokedet. Svina Rokedet sounds like a boat that's rocking, which means that the bottom is just like a V at the bottom, whether it's mamasha V, you know, is the way, if you look in the Koran, by the way, their picture is like a V, really like a V. But you can see here in the Schottenstein, it's more rounded, right? It's just that the bottom is pointy, you know, it comes to a... What?
Because the bottom has a keel.
Right. Exactly. So, Svina Rokedet. Now, first of all, these are just interesting ways to describe shapes, right? A teva prutza. I was thinking about it, even a teva, you think of teva Moshe, like it also floated on the water. You know, these words all associated with water, and I'm not sure why specifically they use these kind of words. And Svina Rokedet just sounds bichlal interesting, right? A dancing boat, if you translate it literally, not rocking, but dancing. But it shows like it's instability, okay? And it looks like a V. But when we went to the bread workshop, he claims that that it wasn't like that, that there's no way you could ever, and this is why when you have a baker, you can, you know, his expertise is that there's no way any bread would ever stay in that shape. It's impossible. And he claims, I don't remember all his proofs, but that it was rounded. Okay? It was just like a semicircle. And that was the shape, and you can see from the pictures, if you swipe, there's pictures of the breads rounded. Yeah, that picture. Okay? And that's what they look like. Okay? So that's the basic machloket.
That would also seem to me to be the least breakable.
Right. It would be the least breakable. Right. The problem with the rectangular ones, which is why it broke, is the size. The sides are heavy. It's a heavy bread because it's like, it's dense. And the sides just fall right over. So the rounded does make a little bit more sense in that sense. But we're going to talk about, now we're going to basically kind of put them to test, both these opinions, based on facts that we know about the Shulchan and things that were on the Shulchan. Okay, for this picture in this book, which is also happens to be the Koran, I have this book called the Encyclopedia Karta of the Beit HaMikdash B'Yerushalayim, and the Koran often takes their pictures from here. They must have a scheme with them about, you know, using their pictures. There's a picture of all the parts that we're going to talk about, so you can pass that around. Also in the Schottenstein, if you have. Again, pictures are only helpful to the extent that they're showing you one approach. Clearly, there's many different ways to understand all the different things that we're going to discuss here and how exactly they look. And the picture only shows it for the square ones. It doesn't really talk about for the rounded ones or the V-shaped, if you go by that interpretation. Okay, the bezichin sat on top of the breads. So you could see, if you have the bread rectangular shape, so you could put the bezichin on top of them. But if it's a V, there's no way, or a rounded shape, there's no place to stick the bezichin on top of the top loaves of bread, right? Remember, there were six on one side, six on the other, so at the very top, they put the bezichin. So there's nowhere to put them, right? Remember, the bezichin were those bowls full of the frankincense. So where would they sit? So what do they say? Bezichin mekom avid lehu. Okay, they say, sorry, I read it wrong. So what do they answer? Mekom avid lehu. They would make it thicker, kind of. It's on a different one. But they would make the thickness, I guess, is the way they, you know, there was a certain thickness of the rim of the bread, and on that rim, it would be thick enough to have the bezichin. Bishlama lamanda amar kimin teva prutza. We're going to see the whole beginning of the Gemara is supporting the rectangular shape. So makes sense, teva prutza. Hainu dehava yatve kanim. Okay, what would they have? Okay, we're going to see. I kind of have to say this first because otherwise it doesn't make sense. We're going to go backwards. First, we're going to talk about the snifim. There were these snifim. Okay, if you look at this picture, there were things that, like poles that went up, and on each pole was like a rectangular piece, like a sort of a slot, like a piece of gold, you know, because everything was gold here, that kind of went on the sides of the table. And into those slabs of gold, whatever you would call them, they would put three reeds, three poles across. Okay, three poles that went from one side to the other, and those poles would support the bread. The assumption was that what? That this would prevent the breads from molding. If you have the breads touching each other, then there's no airspace in between them. We all know that. So the breads are resting on these three. They're not resting on the panes. Well, they're also resting on the canes. Right, the canes. Exactly. So they're resting on those little poles that are going across. Okay, so there's three poles going across. Now, if the bread is rectangular, so then the poles go from one side to the other, right? They rest on the top of this rectangle, right? So they go across. They have what to rest on. But if the breads are rounded, then here you can look in the Schottenstein pictures, for example. If it goes through the middle of the bread, so that's fine. But on the edges of the bread, it's just pointy. So there's nowhere for the pole to kind of hang on to. It's gonna fall right away. Yeah, I mean, I guess you had the things that were holding them on the sides, but the assumption is that this isn't really gonna work on a on a rounded, or, you know, exactly how this was. So therefore, they say that can't possibly be. So what do they answer? Right, so Ela Lamanda Markamin Spina Rokede Kanim Hechi Havoyate, on what would they sit? So what do they answer? Morasha Abidlihu. They would make the edges of them more, like they would go out a little bit at the edges so that there would be a place that would kind of widen at the edges so that there would be a place for these poles to sit on. Okay, Bishlama Lamanda Amar Kimin Teva Prutza. Now the assumption was these snifim, those are those side boards that kind of went on the sides. Now those boards supported the bread. Now if you have the bread rectangular shape with the edges going up, so those lean up against the snifim, and then the snifim are there to protect them, especially, what do we say? It's very easy, they're going to fall, so they protect them from falling. Again, you have the poles underneath, those are going to make airspace in between each loaf. But the ones, things on the sides are going to, number one, they support the poles, but they hold up the sides of the bread. That makes sense. But if it's a V or a rounded shape, right, then what's the problem? How are the snifim going to support the bread? There's a teeny little bit at the edge that's touching those snifim. That's not going to support anything, really. So what are the answer? Da'ayile me'aga. They're rounded, those snifim. Okay, now what exactly does this mean? So it's not 100% clear, but if you look in the Schottenstein, I'll pass this around if anyone doesn't have, they kind of claim that these snifim were, they come down, okay, very different from the picture you'd see in the regular Beit HaMikdash books, which are just, they're these flat things that kind of go alongside the edges of the table and, you know, touch the outside of that, the rectangular breads. But here, they go down, and they go in, and then they're semicircular in shape. It's kind of like, almost like a, I was thinking of bookends. That's the closest you can imagine, right? It's a bookend. It comes, it's got a line on, you know, it's straight up, and then it goes underneath. But instead of the bookend at the bottom being flat, it's rounded, and it's also thick. And that kind of holds the bread in place, because it molds itself to kind of fit around the bread. And in that way, it supports the bread, and what we're going to see, not only does it support the bread, but the bread, think about a bookend. A bookend often falls over if you don't have books there. So the bread holds the bookend, so to speak, in place. So that these snifim end up being held in place by the bread, plus they hold the bread in place. Okay, they're kind of specially molded. So that's what it means, they're rounded, at least according to some interpretations. I'm sure you can explain it other ways. This is a very complicated daf because the reality, without having pictures, it's so difficult to describe in words shapes and what exactly it's supposed to look like, right? Because an architect, you could probably appreciate, right? The how can you can describe without drawing it to architects in the room. Okay. Bishlam alamanda amar kimin sfina rokedet. Hainu debi'inan snifin. Wait, now if you say, okay, now I get it though. Once you explain that they're rounded, I understand why you need the snifin. Ela lamanda amar kimin teva prutza. Snifim lamali. In other words, the spinavro kedit one, so they really hold it in place. But what's the point of the snifim for the rectangular one? So what are the answer? And this is what we already said. Agav yukra de lechem tlach. Okay, in other words, because of the weight of the bread, it could in theory break. So therefore the snifim would kind of hold it in place so it wouldn't break. Bishlam alamanda markimin spinavro kedit. Snifim algabeshucham munachim. Now, if you say Svina Rokedet, so it makes sense because we said they're like bookends. So where does it, certainly the bottom one, where does it rest? On the Shulchan itself. So the base of the Snif is the Shulchan. Ela Lamanda Amar Kamin Tveah Prutza Snifin Hechamanach Lehu. Remember what we said, that the, this is a different, we learned this the other day, that the length of the bread filled up the entire Shulchan. So you couldn't put the Snif, it's like putting a bookend. When the books take up the entire shelf, you have no space for the bookend, right? Imagine a thick bookend, right? Obviously, they make those thin bookends so that in theory you could. But if you had a thick bookend, right, it wouldn't be able to sit anywhere on the table. So they say, right, where would you put it then? What would the snifim be supported by? It can't fit on the shulchan because, right, if the bread's rounded, then even though it takes up the whole length of the table, there's the part underneath that's empty space because it's rounded. So it doesn't fill up the bottom of the table, the base of the table. But the rectangular one filled up the entire base of the table. There was nowhere for the snif to stand. So what's the obvious answer? So first they question. They say, what, you think they put it on the floor? Okay, look at this picture. You can see the snifim were, in fact, on the floor. Okay, if you want to pass the picture around, you can see that the base of these snifim, it was a whole construction. Okay, for those who don't have a picture, you can try to look up a picture of Lechem HaPanim on Google. I'm sure you'll find this. But it had a base at the bottom, a pole going up. Off that pole came all the snifim. Okay, and in that way, they were off the table. They weren't on the table. They actually were on the floor. So the Gemara first questions that. What, you think they put it on the floor? They say, yes, they did. They put it on the floor. How do we know this? Even it's said by somebody else that it was on the floor. De'amar Rabbi Abba Bar Mama, L'divrei ha'omer kimin svina rokedet, snifim agabe shulchan munachim, L'divrei ha'omer kimin teva putza, snifim agabe karka munachim. Okay, so in fact, they were placed on the floor, according to this opinion. So the snifim, number one, looked totally different. They were a totally different shape, according to each opinion. And where they were supported, where their base sat, was also totally different. One on the table, one on the floor. Okay, so you see that these opinions not just reflect the way the bread shape was, it affects what shape all the pieces were that went along with it. Kiman az lahada amar Rav Yehuda, halechem ma'amid et hasnifim, v'hasnifim ma'amidim et halechem. Okay, according to which opinion does Rav Yehuda's statement that this lechem supports the snifim and the snifim support the bread? Who does this go according to? Now this matches what I said before. Kimanda amar kimin svina rokedet. Because then, right, if you just say the snifim were standing from the floor, they went up and they just stood on the sides, then the bread's not supporting the snifim. The snifim was supported by the floor. And that's not the issue. So it would only work, what Rabbi Yehuda said, according to if you say Svina Rokedet, because then, again, it has this semicircular kind of mold at the bottom, which both holds the bread in place, and by the bread being there, it holds those kind of shell, I don't know what the best word for snifim, shelves sort of in place. Did you want to say something?
Did you see any discussion anywhere of why this problem exists to begin with? Like, why is, what, the logic behind having a shulchan the size of which is dictated to be smaller than the size of the breads. Fundamentally, this could have been much more simple, and for whatever reason, it's not.
Look, the one thing that pops into my head is just that you want a full table.
Hashem could have given the proportions of the table slightly larger, or the portions of the bread slightly
except
smaller.
Except that everything's like by amot and... Right, you could have. I mean, it definitely could have been, but why? Right, I don't know the answer to that question. It's a good question.
The bread and the shulchan are both by a mot, whatever they come out to be. The bread is too big for the shulchan.
Right.
It seems that somewhere along the line, the shulchan should have been bigger, the bread smaller, and that wouldn't.
Right. Here is interesting. Once you have this whole thing on the side, you can maybe see also that the shulchan was. If these things sit, go off the shulchan, you know, except it doesn't really work with the Svina Rokedet. But I was thinking that. You kind of want the shulchan just for the bread, and then you can have all the supports off the shulchan, because that's already secondary, and you want everything to be on the shulchan, that's important. But it doesn't really make sense with the Svina Rokedet. I don't have a good answer to that
question. Maybe there's like a nice symbolism. I keep trying to find symbolism. And the bread needed the framework, and the framework needed the bread.
There's something very nice about that, exactly, about how everything supports everything else, right? It's a very nice image that... Take it farther. I like that thought. It's a nice comment. Halechem amidit hasnifim, hasnifim amidim et halechem. Right, you can think about it. Personal relationships, and you can take that. That's very nice. I was also, the Svina Rokedet, the Teva Prutza, what the imagery of that is, right? The Svina Rokedet sounds so chagigi, right? It sounds like we don't really think of dancing boats. It seems, I'm sure there's a better way to say rocking boat, right? Not, the rocking also has a connotation, I guess, of dancing, rock. I don't know. But Teva Prutza sounds like a Pandora's box, like an open, but it also sounds very open, right? That sort of there's openness. I don't know. Not sure what you can make with those images. Okay, we're going to go on a little bit farther. Meitive. Now we're going to have a question. We're starting at the top of Tzadi Ham and Aleph. We have a question on the opinion that it's a Svina Rokedet. Kimin kaveret hayala b'tanur. Kaveret is like a wicker basket type of thing where there's open parts. V'dome, right? This is the tfus that they would bake it in. V'dome kimin tavla merubat. There you have it. It's a tablet, right? A tavla is like a tablet. It sounds very rectangular. Ema upia dome kemin tavla murubahat. So how do they explain it? They say the opening of the tefus. Okay, if you have, let's take the bread around it. Okay, it's hard to put this in three-dimensional, but the top of it is a rectangle, right? If you have this rounded, you know, boat shape thing, but the top of it is going to be a rectangle because that's the shape. So you could explain it that way, which then doesn't contradict. And now we're going to end with a braita that supports. This is why I said some people say it's very strange that they paskin like the teva prutsa. And you could see maybe why they did, because all along they keep saying all of these other facts seem to much better correspond with the teva prutsa. Right? Everyone started, almost all of them start off bishlama lamanda mar teva prutsa. However, at the end they bring braita to support the other reading, but maybe that's still why. Tanya kamanta mar kamin spina rokedet. Titanya arba'a snifim shel zahav hayusham mifutzalim me'rashehen kamin dakranim hayu. Shesomchim behem et alechem shehu domeh kamin spina rokedet. Okay, before we understand, or I would say attempt to understand what this means, because I really don't understand it very well, and it's quite complicated, and the Mefarshim grappled with exactly what this means. But the main point here that they're bringing it is Shehu Domeh Kemin Sfina Rokedet. So there you have it in a braita that they use the Lashon of Sfina Rokedet, and that seems to obviously then support that reading. Okay, so what does this mean? There were four snifim that were of Zahav, that were Mefutzalom Roshehem like Dokranim. It sounds like they were fork-like, okay? There were things jutting out. That were somchim behem et alechem. It sounds like, almost, let's go back to our image of a bookend, that the bookend at the bottom had things jutting out that were kind of supporting the bread, that, which was then supporting the bread that was domek kemin spina rokedet. Okay, exactly what this is, I struggle to understand with the different refreshing we're explaining about how this exactly looked and what these jokornim were, but it sounds like some sort of spikes coming out that were basically supporting the bread. Okay, but again, the main point for this purpose is it seems to support the reading that it was a spina rokedet. Okay, we'll stop here for today.